Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. It's Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you following our first Monday Night Football, which is always interesting and exciting, especially with the return of Aaron Rodgers. We'll dig into that as the 49ers dominate. The Royals, well, we thought they had one in hand, and then the bullpen blows it. So we'll get into that. Speaking of the Royals, our Royals insider, Mike Gillespie from Kings of Kauffman, will join us. And we begin to look ahead, week two in the NFL. Of course, with the Kansas City Chiefs, feels like a while since they've played, right? Since last Thursday, last Thursday. They'll play the Bengals this weekend. We'll have Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, in as well in the next 2 hours. Jacob Albrecht here, Tommy Kester alongside me. Jad Chambers driving this ship. He's manning the IHOP hotline, which is always open for you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. Still bringing you that all-you-can-eat pancakes deal through September 15th. We appreciate you being with us here on KFH on the Odyssey app. Maybe you're watching us on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, or on 12 News Connected. However it is that you take in the show, we appreciate it. And if you're listening from the future for free in a podcasted form on the Odyssey app, we appreciate you as well. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Tuesday. I was thinking about you yesterday. I know that you were out at the fair, so I was hopeful that you had a good day at the fair. You enjoyed some good fair food. You enjoyed shaking hands and kissing babies like a true politician. Yep. I hope you hope you enjoyed it.
I did, and I'll be back out there today, by the way. If you're out at the fair, stop by the 12 News booth and say hi. Yeah, I did. I got my gyro, as us, country white folks would call it, a gyro. But I got that, and it was delicious as always. Those are my buddies over there that run that stand. And I'll get some corn probably today, and maybe something else. We'll see. But it is fun. I appreciate everybody that stops by and says they listen to the show. Some farmers and ranchers out there that are out in the mornings that listen to the show. We appreciate you guys that stopped in yesterday. My kid's bus driver's son, who has told him that he listens to the show every day. We appreciate it. It's always very humbling to know that we can help so many people pass the time in the day. I tell people that all the time. We're here to help pass the time in your day. One of the farmers out at the fair was telling me like every morning, like that's just, helps us. We're on the tractor. And I'm like, man, that's why I got into this. I was plowing fields on an old bunk tractor. And the only thing I could get was AM radio out in the country. And I would listen to sports talk radio every day, that and delivering flowers for my grandpa. Like those are the reasons I get it. So we're here for you. We appreciate it. You can also, get in touch with the program on those video streams. So we have this new feature on the Odyssey app. We've yet to have anybody take it. We've got like a voice message feature on there that allows you to you push like the little microphone if you go find the show, and you can leave a voice message, and that feeds to Jad. So if you're not able to wait live, if maybe you have a quick point, you can always try that. We're excited to see somebody give that thing a whirl. We haven't really tested it, but it's there. It is there for you as well. All right. Tommy, Monday Night Football, because we'll get to the Royals. Mike Gillespie will join us a little later this hour, so we'll get to the Royals in just a minute. But Monday Night Football was interesting. We knew it would be interesting. We at least got to see Aaron Rodgers play. I went so back and forth with this. On Thursday, I told our betting insider, PJ, I was like, this might be my favorite bet of the week, the Niners. This just seems like such a layup. And he was like, and he was a little cautious on it. And then by Friday, when our picks rolled around, I was like, you know what? That's a lot of points. Maybe it's a close game. The one thing I didn't count on in this game is the Jets' defense was not good at all. And I know San Francisco has a really, really good offense, but if the Jets' defense isn't what it was, I mean, that changes everything. It's more about that than it even is about Rodgers, right? Like if the Jets' defense isn't what it has been over the past few years, they're not doing anything this year. Rodgers didn't look great, but he didn't look bad. He certainly looked better than Zach Wilson has looked. But the Niners, as you would expect, kind of bottled up Breece Hall a little bit. They went all out on that. They have some great players. But man, the Jets defense really let them down. After about the first quarter and a half, the Niners were just moving the ball at will. That I did not expect in that game. But San Francisco, the biggest takeaway from the game, Tommy, is that San Francisco is very good. They did all of this without Christian McCaffrey, by the way. and a rookie undrafted free agent Jordan Mason leading the charge on the ground. Kyle Shanahan runs the ball better than any coach in football. The Niners are loaded. They're healthy for the most part. I know McCaffrey didn't play, but he'll play at some point. They came into the season at some point. I don't know where it actually started with all their contract disputes. They were the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. Let's remember, not the Chiefs. And I think that they showed last night why that is. They are really stinking good.
Yeah, I think that you can point to the Sauce Gardner absence in the second quarter as part of the reason why the Jets defense didn't have an overall good game. After the game, he said that he had the wind knocked out of him, and that's why he was on the sideline for a good portion of that second quarter, and things kind of got away from the Jets defense at that point. Going back to Aaron Rodgers, I thought that there were flashes of vintage Aaron Rodgers. The drive that he put together early in the game, he really leaned on Garrett Wilson on that drive. He had a good connection with Alan Lazard also, which isn't surprising by any means. There were some good things and there were some bad things about Aaron Rodgers, and that was about, I think, what I expected to see from Rodgers. It's been such a long time since we've actually seen him, out on the field. And I really believe that the positive plays that we saw from Rodgers, that's a result of just being a veteran and being savvy and knowing his way around the football field. There wasn't anything, at least from what I could tell, that was overly athletic from Aaron Rodgers, but there really hasn't been in the last few years, even when he was healthy. It was more, he just knows how to play quarterback at the NFL level, at a really high level. And so that's really, I think, what he fell back on in that game. And it worked for him at times, and it didn't work for him. He threw a pick. He didn't have a ton of yards. His completion percentage wasn't incredible, but he made it through the vast majority of the game. Obviously, the Jets pulled him, there towards the end when it was kind of a blowout. But that was about what I expected to see from Aaron Rodgers. I didn't expect for the defense to have as many issues as it did. But that being said, I said it multiple times, I needed to see it to believe it from the Jets before I was willing to jump on the bandwagon. I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't mean that they can't be a good team. It doesn't mean that they can't win some games. But they were outmatched by the 49ers. There's no doubt about it. And that's a Christian McCaffrey-less 49ers that they were outmatched by.
So the Jets, the Rodgers signing 2 years ago, I thought made all the sense in the world. Last year was obviously a disaster. We want the best for them for Breece Hall's sake. At least I do. I want to see how good Garrett Wilson really is, because I think he's a stud who's had one of the worst quarterback situations of all time, maybe. It was always a question of, can they be a real contender? And then we get Rodgers this year, and then he has the weird offseason, and there was that point in the offseason where I think we both were like, we're out, I'm out on the Jets. Like, it's not going to work as far as, because it is Super Bowl or bust. Don't mistake it. Like, the Jets are absolutely Super Bowl or bust. It's just like, I'm out. That was more about Rodgers' level of investment. That has all since simmered, and it's been a lot better. But I'm telling you, like, if their defense isn't like one of the best defenses in football, they're not going to do anything, no matter what Aaron Rodgers does. That was always a part of the equation. That was the part that surprised me last night. It wasn't that, they scored 19 points, and I know one of them was on a busted play, but that's Aaron Rodgers' MO to hit Alan Lazard over the top like that. It's just, when you see them score 19 points, Tommy, there's been a lot of, like, the last 3-4 years, if you could tell me the Jets were going to score 19 points, I'd tell you they'd win a lot of these games, right? Like, that's kind of what they do. And so, like, part of the equation's there. And San Francisco, by the way, has a really good defense. So it's 19 points on San Francisco. You're like, okay, now, like, that's going to play. It's the other half of it where it doesn't make any sense and you scratch your head a little bit. If their defense can't come out and shut down not only bad teams, but every team in football, they're not doing anything. Now, that doesn't mean they can't contend for the division. We saw Buffalo struggle. We saw Miami struggle. I think they can probably do that. But if their defense is not elite, and I mean like top 2-3 elite, they're not going to do anything this year. That was always a part of their Super Bowl equation. And we just didn't see that in the first game. So if you're the Chiefs and you're scouring around for who are the contenders this year, and we look back at week one now, at this point, the Jets aren't there. Now, it's 1 week, And maybe their defense bounces back and that was a bad game. And that could totally happen. And that would be fine. But as of now, the Jets aren't a contender with the Chiefs. The Bengals lose to the Patriots at home. We'll have to wait and see when they get all their weapons back. We've seen that story before with the Bengals. I'm still going to call them a contender. They have been terrible out of the gates forever. The Browns, no. The Bills, I'm not writing off the Bills yet. They did find a way to come back and win that game. I would tell you, though, the Dolphins, no. The Dolphins aren't contenders. The Texans absolutely are. Maybe the biggest statement of that group of teams, of course, the Ravens still are. They lost their game by a toenail. Then you go to the NFC. Certainly the Eagles would be. Jordan Loveless Packers. We better get Jordan Love back. You can cross them off the list. Lions found a way to win a game that they did, that was weird. I'm going to still consider them a contender. Niners obviously are a contender. And then you've got the Cowboys probably, which... I'm a jaded Cowboys fan that's not going to consider them a contender, but I think you'd be foolish not to at least can put them in that group right now. So it's a little bit of a shift. I would say the Dolphins are out for me. The Jets are out for me. And that's probably, and the Packers only because they don't have Jordan Love, I guess, at this point, but he should be back. So,
let me get this straight. The Dolphins are out for you and they won in week number one.
Yeah. Okay. That's a bigger picture. They're not going to go and win a bunch of games in cold weather in the postseason. That's it. And they weren't in there for me to begin the season. Like, I didn't consider the Dolphins a contender, but they certainly didn't do anything in the first week that makes me think I was wrong about that. I don't think they're a real contender. So I think you have the Chiefs and give the Ravens. I think you still have the Bills. I think you have the Eagles and the Niners. You probably, I'll reluctantly say the Cowboys, even though I don't really believe it.
You didn't mention the Texans. The Texans are the one,
I think the Texans made the biggest statement.
I think
the Texans absolutely are. And the Bengals still are because they've done this before. We've seen this out of them before.
I think after 1 week of the season, the NFC looks to be potentially a stronger conference as a whole than the AFC does. I mean, I think that the AFC is pretty top heavy. You've got the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Texans. And then I think you've got a gap, and it doesn't mean that the Bengals won't, you know, get it together. It doesn't mean that the Dolphins won't, you know, continue to be a strong team, or the Bills or whatever. But I think you've got a couple teams at the top of the AFC and then everybody else. There's a lot more parity from what I can tell, at least through 1 week of the season in the NFC. It's going to be more of a jumbled mess there.
I will say this about the AFC. It doesn't look like there are any just god-awful teams. The Patriots may get there, but the Patriots also could be very well coached now with a new coach and be pesky this year. But that was the only one. Whereas we know the Giants are not going to be good at all. We know the Panthers are not going to be good at all. And, you know, I know the Saints, but we can make our way through on that a little bit. We're going to call this a mega overreaction Tuesday. We're looking way too much into week one. But I think when we look at the Chiefs and the chance at history and the three-peat, that ought to be always what we're doing, is kind of sizing up the field against them. The Niners make that statement last night. Niners are going to be tough. And the Chiefs beat them by a nose. You know, like, so that shouldn't surprise us, but they're back. Everybody's signed. They don't even have McCaffrey. And they just absolutely smashed a team that we expected to have one of the best defenses in football. We'll come back. We will continue the conversation here. We'll begin to set the table. Mike Gillespie coming up, bottom of the hour, to talk a little Royals. We'll set the table for that. We'll begin to scratch the surface on a couple of massive, massive games for KU and K-State this week. We've got Chiefs talk coming as well, with Dan Israel coming at the top of the hour. We'll stick with the NFL. Let's talk Chiefs-Bengals. What do we think about that game just at a bird's eye look? That's next on Sports Daily. Albrecht and Caster. All of this football talk, by the way, is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits. Still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this. Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. We'll set you up with a text to win contest for some HDO. You can enter the contest by texting the keyword T to the short code 20357. That'll give you a chance to win a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from. and a free Free Reign coffee drink. All the great classics, iStore hot, including the all-new Apple Crisp Dirty Chai and the new Butter Pecan Mocha Latte. Those are available for you, iStore hot, as well as all the coffee drinks. You can get one of each, a tea, a coffee. Each participant can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Again, that's tea, T-E-A, to the short code 20357 via text to win on that. Welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH, staying up late with Monday Night Football. Tommy, how did your first week of fantasy football go?
It was up and down. I mean, you know, as you know, because you're in like 40,000 different leagues, it's hard to, you know, have a lot of success in all of them, because maybe you've got a player in one league that you're competing against in another league. So you got to kind of go back and forth on that. Overall, it was good. I think I'm in four or five leagues this year. And my favorite one to watch, which I didn't even think that it was going to be my favorite one, but it's the Guillotine League that you and I are in, with TJ Cleland from 12 News and a bunch of other people, because like there were 32 teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And it came down
a two quarterback league with 32
teams. And it can, you know, and if you're not familiar with the Guillotine League, the teams at the very bottom each week get cut from the league. They're done. And then all their players hit the free agent pool that everybody else can claim. And it came down to the final drive last night on who was going to get cut. And we'll have to give TJ some grief for this on Friday, because he was one of the teams that got cut. But, you know, like, I'm watching the game.
I thought he made it. That's hilarious.
He got cut.
He got cut
by a point. And so, you know, and he's the one that put the league together. He's the commissioner of the league, and he's out in week number one. So I told him that, you know, the good thing about it is that he can now dedicate all his time to being the best commissioner that he can be.
That's right. That will be bittersweet to now have to deal with that for this many weeks as your team is eliminated. Yeah, it was I wasn't totally sad, but I didn't come out of those drafts very. I was so distracted. I haven't been like home for all my drafts and doing things in so long that I would finish them and be like, man, that team's not very good. But man, that was a fun draft, whatever. I'm too busy talking trash, if you can believe it, to really pay that much attention. But it was fine. Brees Hall's first touchdown bet was money last night, though. I'll tell you that. That one was very fruitful.
Your betting, by the way, I feel like, especially to start the season, has been, you know, pretty solid. You and I were texting last night. I haven't had a chance to really do much at all.
I didn't do well in college football on Saturday at all. I was way off, as we'll get to picks later this week, and everybody can see that. Way off. However, the NFL was pretty good. The NFL was pretty good to me. So overall, it was a pretty good week. And we'll get into some of those things. These first touchdowns, I hit a Worthy first touchdown, hit Brees Hall first touchdown. There was a lot there. So that was all good too. But we're in the thick of it, and it is so hard. You've been having a crazy couple weeks. I have to traveling every day this week. So it's hard to like lock in like normal. Like normally we're looking at this, and now there's like, there's waiver wires for fantasy, all these fantasy football players. Hey, I'm sitting here, I'm like, I don't have time for that.
It doesn't help that, you know, we've got our attention diverted from the NFL and college football to the Royals, you know, continuing in September. That hasn't happened in a long time.
So the Royals last night, I know, and this is, you know, we've got our eye on it, and listening to that on the drive back from the fair yesterday, ready to switch over to Monday Night Football. Thanks to KFH and the Odyssey Network for bringing me all those chances to listen to all that, make my drive shorter. The Royals lose 10-4. I was worried about Brady Singer in the game. Singer was okay. He did all right. He certainly gave them a chance to win. They were winning when he left the game. And the wheels fell off on James MacArthur. So he allowed four runs. That's not good. You know, like Tommy, we sit here and we look at it. 10-4 losers in this. It doesn't worry me that much. You know, Salvador Perez heated up. Okay, so that check that box right now. Bobby Witt Jr. has not all the way heated back up, but all in all, it was James MacArthur's, you know, blunder that cost the Royals the game. So I'm not worried about the loss at all. But it was one they had a chance to win. That does make it sting just a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, really the common factor is that James MacArthur should not be in high-leverage situations ever again. Okay. And, you know, that's been the way it's been for the last few weeks. I think he had a brief spot where there was maybe a game or two where he came in and he was okay. But by and large, I mean, for gosh, what, the last couple of months, it's not been good for him.
To be fair to James McArthur, since August 5th, in 16 appearances since August 5th, before last night, he'd only given up one run through all of those appearances. He otherwise was clean. You know, he wasn't clean in the sense of, but he was even more clean, Tommy, than he had been. Now, he had given up some hits and done some of those things.
But how many of those situations were in a ball game like the one that they were facing?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure off the top of my head. In high leverage, you mean? Like, I don't know. But, I think the problem for me is with, and we'll get to Mike Gillespie on this too and get his take on it. James McArthur's stuff is sort of high leverage stuff. He's been in the role before. He was moderately successful, and he had had a stretch of games there over a month, almost a month and a week. So what is that, 5-6 weeks, where he had been very effective. So, I mean, I get it. When Singer has to leave the game in the fifth inning, somebody has to pitch, you know, like it's got to go to somebody. And so then I look at it as like, okay, do I trust Stratton more than McArthur? I do not. I trust McArthur far more. Now, Stratton was clean last night, but, you know, way down at that point. So it's unfortunate because I do think McArthur's going to have to be one of the guys that they lean on, because who else is there? You have Ursig right now. I mean, I think Bubic at some point is still fine. I don't know what Harvey's status is. Sam Long, I guess. Like, none of those guys have been, you know, out with the exception of Ursig, have been significantly better than McArthur. So it was a bad outing. I think what we really have to watch now is what does he do in his next one, right? Because the problem for him this year has been it like gets bad and then the wheels sort of fall off a little bit for a while. Is this a blip on the radar, or is this the beginning of another one of those stretches? And I think, yeah, there's only one way to find that out, and that's, you know, the next opportunity. You got to give him the ball. I do think they have to give him the ball. I know you don't want to see him pitch again. The problem is, what's the replacement there? That's the issue that I see for the team. I just don't know that they have anybody else they can go to like that.
I do think that that's a challenge. I mean, it absolutely is, and they just don't have. I think really at the end of the day, it just comes down to reliability. Who do you trust? They don't even necessarily need to have lights out stuff. I mean, remember Lucas Ursig when he was first traded, he came in and he was lights out. And that was incredible. And watching the way that the energy that he brought to the bullpen was great. I'm not even asking for that from other relievers. I just want a little bit of reliability, somebody that you can throw out there. And you have a good idea that it may not be the best thing in the world, but at least you're not looking at a potential blow up in your faces as well. And, you know, and that there's been far too much of that. I mean, McArthur doesn't even log an out and he gives up 4 earned runs, right? Like doesn't even log an out.
Right.
So that
when he's bad, he's very bad.
And that's the way that it's been with a lot of these Royals relievers. When they're bad, they are extremely bad. It's not just, you know, like they were mediocre. No, it's either like they're lights out in the case of Ursig, or they are god awful.
So when we look at their wins recently, like on that streak, it would appear, and McArthur had been a part of that, and so had Long. Schreiber, we forget, and we'll get to Mike Gillespie on this in just a second. I'm just looking at it because this is maybe a pressing thing to sort through. Starter to Bubic to Ursig is, I would imagine, the favored formula, but that's not going to happen every time. And especially with, you know, in a Marsh start or a Singer start, these kinds of things. So toy with that as we go to break here, and we'll bring in Mike Gillespie to get his take on it. There is a hole there still. And you know, what are the Royals going to do here? Because the good news is we're focused on that again, instead of like, oh my God, the wheels are falling off. Are they even going to make it? I think we can reshift focus back to what's the best version of this team as the postseason gets here. So we'll talk to Michael Espy, that Kings of Kauffman. That's coming up next. You can get us your comments on our video streams. If you've got any questions for Mike, Facebook, YouTube, X, we can get those to him. Let us know. Royals, they'll be right back in action tonight, and you'll hear them right here on KFH, 6 o'clock. Mike Gillespie, more Royals talk when we come back on Sports Daily. right, welcome back in, everybody. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Good place to go watch the Royals if you're looking for a spot as they continue the postseason chase. Tom and I both out there. We appreciate their sponsorship of the program. We enjoy being out there. Great golf season right now as we bring in Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, back to join us, our Royals insider. Love having Mike be a part of things with us here on Sports Daily as we come down the home stretch. So we proposed this, Mike, right before. Give the listeners a chance to ponder it. What is the formula for the Royals? We know they like to go starter Bubic, Urcic. But in the games they can't go starter Bubic, Urcic, what is the best case scenario? MacArthur had been clean. Obviously, the wheels fell off last night. But what are you seeing out of the bullpen, and how would you like to see it stack up? Because this stuff matters as we think about the postseason.
Well, I don't, you know, I don't know if there is a quote best unquote scenario. This is something that's been going on all season long. I was listening to you gentlemen before the break, and you know, I think you size up MacArthur pretty well. He's just so inconsistent. He has a string of good games, and then he comes in last night and pin the loss on MacArthur. There's no question about that. I don't know what it is with MacArthur. He, like you say, he's got great stuff when he's got it. When he doesn't, it can be disastrous. I don't think you can count Daniel Lynch out of this equation. Of course, the trouble with Lynch is, you know, if you're going to face a lot of right-handed lineups, you got Lynch, who's a left-hander. But, regardless and notwithstanding that lefty-righty issue, it may be time for Quatrero to say, you know, Hernandez doesn't always get it done. MacArthur is so unreliable and unpredictable. Maybe we try Lynch a little bit more than we are. I wrote yesterday maybe he would give Lynch some high leverage situations because Urcic can't pitch every day. But, you know, I think the bottom line at this point is nothing's going to change. There isn't somebody out there they're going to get. I mean, Cleveland put Scott Barlow. You know, they designated him for assignment over the weekend. Barlow's not the answer. He had a disastrous August. If Barlow was the answer, he probably would still be in Kansas City, but he's not.
Is Harvey coming back? Like what? Because that's the guy I keep looking at is maybe they get Hunter Harvey back and he's actually healthy this time.
You know, they're being pretty quiet about Hunter Harvey. They seemed optimistic when they put him on the injured list that he wouldn't be there very long. But, you know, we don't hear much about him. I fear to an extent that maybe we're not going to see him back this year. When the Royals have negative injury news and they're uncertain, they don't say much about it at all. They're not all that open about those things. So I've kind of crossed Harvey off my list for the rest of the season just because of that. Now, watch them, you know, activate him today, but that's kind of the way I look at that at this point.
You know, Mike, one of the things that I feel like is a negative byproduct of what the Royals are facing with the bullpen is that the temptation becomes, and we've seen this happen from time to time, the temptation for Matt Quatrero becomes to lean even heavier on the starters, have them pitch as many innings as possible. And, you know, eventually you get to a point where you're dealing with fatigue and, you know, injury risk and that sort of thing. Michael Lorenzen obviously has been injured. And, I specifically can remember the situation with Michael Wacha. I think, again, the Cleveland series where Quatrero sent him out for the seventh inning and he looked clearly tired. And that ultimately cost them, I think, the finale of that Cleveland series. I think it just really comes down to the lack of trust in the majority of that bullpen. As we're getting to the final couple of weeks of the regular season and into the playoffs, I mean, I would assume I haven't been in Matt Quatrero's shoes, but I would imagine that temptation to hang on to your starters for as long as possible just gets larger and larger and larger.
Oh, I agree completely. I mean, it's pretty clear, even though he liked his starters going deeper than usual, even, you know, early in the season, it's pretty clear now that they've got some pretty long leashes simply because the bullpen, the relievers have such short leashes. So I'm going to look for that to continue. I don't think he has a lot of choice. I'm really interested to see how Lugo goes against the Yankees tonight. You know, he's pitched so many innings beyond what he's ever pitched before. And they can't afford to have Seth Lugo. They can't afford to have Waka go down with an injury. But, you know, every time it gets about the sixth inning with those guys, I really start to get nervous.
And yeah, and you don't have any, but I'll float an idea to you, Mike. As we think about the postseason, I think that's fair to do. Lorenzen has been a utility knife over the course of his career. When he comes back, you don't need five starters in the postseason. What if he's the answer in the pen when he gets back? As we get to that part, what if they deploy him that way as the bridge to Bubich and Urshig?
I think that's a pretty interesting idea. You're right. He's swung back and forth throughout his career. He's done reasonably well both in the rotation and out of the pen. Coming back off of a hamstring injury, it could very well be when he does get reactivated that they work him out of the pen a little bit. And you know, he's been around. He's been in the playoffs. So, you know, I think if I'm J.J. Pecola and Matt Quatrero, I think pretty seriously about putting him out there. And you make a really good point. He doesn't need to be in the rotation come the playoffs because you're right, you don't need a five-man rotation there.
You know, Mike, I do think that one of the positives that has come out of the last – few days or so when things were so bad for Kansas City a week ago when you were on this show talking with Paul Savage and I, that has kind of turned around is that it looks like, you know, by and large, the offense has improved. I don't want to say that they're all the way back because I think Bobby Witt Jr. is still struggling a bit, but Salvador Perez had a great game last night. You know, despite the loss, the four-game winning streak, while the offense didn't break loose necessarily, they did what they needed to do to get those victories against the Twins over the weekend. When you look at the lineup and the way it stacks up now, you know, last night is a perfect example, even in the loss. Tommy Pham leads off. Robbie Grossman is the DH. Yuli Gurriel is the first baseman. They've got Hunter Renfroe back. It seems like, by and large, they basically have their full complement of hitters in that lineup on the bench. And so that's got to be something, especially with the struggles that we've just documented, that they lean on down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's good to have all those guys back with a couple of weeks left. I looked at the numbers earlier today. Witt is, you know, since late August, he's like 11 for 51 or 11 for 55. It figures out to 215, and he's driven in four runs. He can't stay there and expect the Royals to have a lot of success. I don't think his slump will last all that much longer. You know, there's some good signs, but one of the interesting things about Witt is if he only gets on base once,
yeah,
he can make so many things happen. You know, that bloop last night and he by Perez and he scores all the way from first. I mean, He's only been around 3 years, but that's already vintage Bobby Witt. So he can be pretty disruptive, but he needs to hit. He, you know, we all know that.
Mike, and we'll follow you here at Mike Gillespie, JD on social media. Kings of Kauffman, of course, Mike's work is available there. You can follow them. We talk about the lineup. I still wonder, Vinny Pasquantino, and I know the Royals, and you've mentioned this before, the injuries are tough. What are the chances if you had to give a 50-50 as the baseline? You think it's better than 50% or worse than 50% chance he could play games in the postseason?
I think it's from what all I've heard about that injury, the fact that he's had that surgery. I think, you know, if you assumed, and I don't think this is a very good assumption to make, but if you assumed that this team could get to the series, that they make that deep a run, I think it's better than 50-50. On the other hand, I don't think he'll be ready. I'd be surprised if he's ready for a wild card series. I mean, I just really would be surprised. Maybe if you get into the division series, he can make an appearance. With him, you know, it's all going to be what can he do with the bat, if he can do anything. Because he can always DH.
Right. So, Mike, and then I would ask you one more here as we look to the rest of this series and beyond. Are we comfortable now with the win streak and the padding that they were able to put in the wild card? I think they probably are comfortable at this point, at least for a wild card. But how much, you know, pressure? We saw the 7-game lose streak. We know they're streaky. Are we in a good place? I know the analytics places have them over 90% and everything. Can Royals fans breathe easy yet, or are we not quite there?
I think Royals fans can breathe a lot easier than they could a week ago. You know, when we chatted last week, I said the Royals aren't going to win the division, and I'm still convinced they're not going to win the division. But, you know, they've got a nice little lead for the second wild card. And, you know, that the second and third wild cards right now are really between the Royals and the Twins. You know, the Red Sox and Detroit are much further back than that, although Detroit is, you know, decided to play now. Yeah, but I think Royals fans can breathe a lot easier. We'll know an awful lot after this series and after they get done with Pittsburgh over the weekend. But I'm already figuring them for the wild card, one of the wild cards.
I am too. It'll be fun, and we'll continue to dissect the bullpen and overanalyze everything. Mike, you can find Mike's work at Kings of Kauffman, kingsofkauffman.com, at Kings of Kauffman on social media. Give Mike a follow there as well. Mike, we appreciate it. And we'll enjoy these last couple of weeks here before hopefully a postseason berth.
Definitely. Looking forward to it.
There goes Mike Gillespie. Always appreciate the visits. If you joined us late, if you missed any of that interview, you can always, of course, go back and check it out on the Odyssey app. Jad puts those out in podcasted form. You can go right there. You can catch the show from past dates if you miss anything. I think it's interesting, Tommy, on the bullpen. Harvey, it doesn't sound like Mike has a good feeling will be back and at least relevant. I love the idea of Lorenzen to the pen. Two reasons. You don't need five starters in the postseason. Marsh is showing them he can get them through this home stretch. Let Lorenzen's done this before. I mean, I knowing nothing else, who would you trust outside of Bubic and Ursig more than Lorenzen in the pen right now if he was to pitch there, right? He's a grinder. The chances of him coming in for a total egg like we get so often from some of these bullpen guys is significantly lower than what they currently put out there.
That's what I thought that they were bringing Michael Lorenzen in to do initially. Right. When they first traded for him, I thought, well,
they may
got,
have been. Yeah, give Alec Marsh a break. I mean, they could have been.
At that time, I'm like, well, they've got five capable starters at minimum. You know, and I felt like even at the time, Alec Marsh was capable. He was inconsistent, but he was capable of getting it done. He had been at times throughout the season. So I felt like, okay, well, they're going to bring in a veteran guy that can bounce back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen. But I felt like he would probably be the bullpen, like a bullpen guy and maybe a spot starter when necessary. And that's not really the way that they've utilized him thus far. I mean, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you follow Lorenzen's former team, the Rangers. Like a couple of days before he was traded to the Royals, didn't he pitch like 4 innings in relief for the Rangers?
Out of a necessity, yeah. He had to like, he and Ursa.
I mean, he's a grinder in that way.
Personalities. Well, they just were like, we're screwed. Can you come in and help? And he was, and he like with no notice on like no rest.
And it was like four innings or something. And he did a good job doing it. And so I do think that when he gets back healthy and gets back with the team, I mean, they need some reinforcements where they get it. That's where they need to have it.
Play. Yeah, and then it also allows you to free up, like if you want Lynch to be a situational guy, and you don't need a long, because in the postseason again, your bridge is pretty much your bridge every night. Like it doesn't change much in a series. Ideally, like your formula doesn't change too much. But we'll watch that. We'll watch his health, and hopefully the Royals can. I mean, who knows? Maybe they stay in contention here in the AL Central and they can string it together. That's certainly still on the table. Certainly an exciting aspect of this season to watch down the stretch. As is, they're after this series finally going to get a little schedule relief. Maybe they can string together a ton of wins and do something really special down the home stretch here. We'll have it all. All right, coming up as we start our next hour, Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, will begin to look ahead to the Bengals. That is coming your way when we return. It's all Brockton Caster. It's Sports Daily. Don't go away.